Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast. Thanks very much for listening, whether you got us from iHeart or Radio MD or someplace else. We don't care. We're glad you got us. And this is the guest segment. We have a wonderful guest for you today talking about vaccines and specifically the flu vaccine and how good or bad it is. And you know my point of view, it is outstanding. 40,000 to 1 ratio of benefit to risk. But let's find out how this year's flu vaccine will work from Richard Webby, who is a PhD member of the Infectious Disease Department at St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. As you know, never charge for a child on that, or never charge to the parents for a charge from that hospital. This is his second appearance on our show. Dr. Webby is a member of a number of prestigious organizations, including the World Health Organization Collaborating Center on Ecology of Influenza in Animals and Birds, and one of the people who chooses which type will be available each year. That is some of the specifics about how they make the vaccines. Dr. Webby, thanks for coming on. This is, by the way, 922B of You, the Owner's Manual Podcast. The A is always the news of the week and what it means to you. The B, one of the great guests like Dr. Webby. So thanks, Dr. Webby, for coming on.
Well, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
So you sound like you have a New Zealand or Australian accent. That's where the flu season starts each year. Is that right? Or is it in China, if you will, but neighbor of yours? And that's how we select what we get for the next year.
Yeah, that's right. So you're right the first time. It's a New Zealand accent. I guess we can argue whether it starts there or starts here, but it's essentially a circle. So it, you know, flu's a winter disease, as we know, well, at least in tropical regions. And so it goes from our winter down to the southern hemisphere. And, yeah, you're dead right. So that's when we look at what we're going to put in the vaccine for the coming, say, the coming northern hemisphere season. You know, the most up-to-date information we have is from what's going on sort of down under.
And the choice of vaccines, the common flu vaccine has both A and B, or influenza A and B protection. Tell us the difference between A and B and why we should care that it's got both A and B.
Yeah, so the flu viruses that we have circulating each year in humans, there's really three major types. There's the flu A's, and there are two of those, what we call an H1 and an H3. And then there is the influenza B, and there's actually two of those as well. I think, you know, in terms of getting them and getting sick, you know, they're really indistinguishable. So both of these, whether it's A, whether it's B, they can all cause, you know, a lot of sickness. And, you know, both of them have unfortunately been associated with deaths in the past as well. So, you know, if you had a vaccine that would just protect you against A, then that unfortunately leaves you susceptible to B and vice versa. So now if you want to be covered against these strains, and you know, we're unfortunately we can't really predict which of those is going to be the dominant strain from year to year. So, you know, we cover that by essentially making a vaccine that protects against all of those four different main variants of flu that circulate.
And now so let's talk about the flu season this year. In Australia, it was particularly bad, as I understand it. Is that correct?
So the flu season, actually, that they're just coming out of has been mild, but the season before that was a very, very severe one. So they had a flu season much like we did in the US last year as well. So they had a season predominated by this H3 strain of influenza A. They had a lot of sickness and some mortality associated well. So they had that season, bad one. Then certainly we in the US had essentially the same thing in our flu season. But the one they're just coming out of, which is now a year later, has actually been a pretty mild one.
And when you say pretty mild one, give us a relative thing. If the flu season was a 10 in badness the year before in Australia, what was it this year?
So we're probably thinking about, you know, probably about, in terms of flu, a 3. But you're right that even a mild flu season still causes a lot of disease and a lot of illness. And, you know, the CDC estimates, you know, in the US, even in a mild season, there's still, you know, tens of thousands of people hospitalized because of it.
And the one of the things I read this week is we're not getting immunized as much as we used to or usually do. Is that correct as well?
You know, I'm not sure on the actual rates of immunization. Certainly the number of doses that the global manufacturers are making is increasing. You know, but how much of that's driven by countries outside of the US as opposed to the, you know, within the US, I'm not sure. So, you know, I can't comment specifically on that. You know, certainly we're getting more options in the US in terms of the types and variations of flu vaccine we have access to, but you know, I'm not sure exactly on the numbers.
And tell us how this committee, and I guess it is a committee, decides on what they're making for the next year. And when does that process start for what they make for the U.S.? And then when does the process start for what they make for down under?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it highlights some of the reasons that sometimes the vaccine's not as effective as we'd like. So the process, say, for the vaccine that, you know, hopefully the listeners have just received in their arm or in their nose for this season, the decision about what goes into that was actually made in February. So the group of scientists would come together, analyze data on what viruses have been circulating.
And how big a group is it?
So the big discussion group is 20 to 20, maybe 25 people. There are 9 advisors to the WHO that, you know, have the final vote on what the WHO recommendations should be. But you know, it's about 25, 30 scientists who meet typically in Geneva. But, you know, they do collect data from a network of labs that's over 140 labs across the globe that are part of this network. So although there are 25, you know, going into the nitty-gritty details, that's sort of the tip of the iceberg in terms of the amount of people that are involved in this whole process.
And so those people are from around the world, or mainly in choosing the U.S. vaccine, the U.S., or mainly from Australia and New Zealand and Brazil. The Southern Hemisphere gets it before us and gets it after us. So since you said it was a circle, is it, how widespread is the distribution? How good are the data in February?
Yeah, so it's the same group of people meet. So this committee meets twice a year. So we meet in February for the Northern Hemisphere selection, and we meet in September for the Southern Hemisphere selection. So there's actually two different times we meet to go over the data. And so it's there are essentially 6 collaborating centers for flu, which, you know, are at the top of this WHO network. And so we're one of those here at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, the CDC in Atlanta, and there's a lab in Tokyo, Beijing, London and Melbourne. So it's pretty good geographical representation at the table.
And when you chose for this year, which I guess was last February, or recommended, I guess is what you call it, do the flu vaccine companies almost always follow the exact recommendations you suggest, or do they have some freedom to vary based on their own feelings?
Yeah, so the way it actually works, so that the WHO makes a recommendation, but in the US, for example, the actual committee that that makes the final decision is actually an FDA decision. And there are other, there are similar committees in different parts of the world. You know, probably 99% of the time, these committees will adopt the WHO recommendation. Every now and again, you know, for various reasons, some of these national regulatory agencies may pick a slightly different formulation, but that's pretty rare.
And there's some uniformity. And how many different companies do make the flu vaccine? I realize we're going over some basic things, since people want to say, hey, I get pricked or I get something up the nose. We'll find out what the differences are. And I'm just curious as to how much variation there is and how much variation that specific thing causes in, if you will, damage or variation in, I guess you'd call it, risk to the person.
Yeah, so in the US, the flu vaccine market's got particularly complicated even in the last few years with more products on the market. So supplying the US market, there's about six manufacturers of products, or five or six manufacturers to the US market. The vast majority of the product that we have available, whether it's from companies like GSK or Sanofi, is an activated vaccine. So that's the shot that we get in the arm. It's vaccine that's grown up in chicken eggs, because that's what flu viruses love to grow. So they grow the virus up in there and they inactivate it, so it's killed. But there are actually now some slightly different products coming on board from different manufacturers. There is one product now that isn't grown in chicken eggs at all. It's actually grown in big vats of just cultured cells. There's another product that doesn't use virus as a starting point at all. So it just essentially makes protein. And of course, there's the flu mist that's available again this year that goes up the nose. So, you know, it's quite a complicated landscape in terms of these different products.
And there's a higher dose one for people over age of either 50 or 60, as I understand it. Is that higher dose one just more volume of the same, or do they concentrate it down? Is there differences in the way it's prepared?
So it's exactly the same vaccine, but it's just formulated to be more concentrated. So I think you're getting essentially exactly the same, but just more of it. And there's another product, for the elderly market, that is also an adjuvanted product. So that, again, has the same vaccine, but it has some additives to it that, you know, really stimulate the immune response as well.
And when the, if you will, how long are they good for? And I've heard some data that people who get it earlier, that is like myself who got it early in September, that maybe we should get revaccinated at the beginning of January. What's the data on that? Do you know?
Yeah, so it's a really interesting thought. So there's some of the studies where epidemiologists have gone out and tried to estimate how effective a flu vaccine is. There's, you know, sort of if you squint, some of these studies suggest that by the end of the season, the effectiveness of the vaccine is dropping off. And one way to interpret that is that, you know, essentially the vaccine boosts your immunity for a shorter period of time, and by the end of the season, it may be waning. Having said that, that's not seen all the time, and, you know, lots of people are looking into it, but, you know, my gut feeling on that is we don't really know if that's the case right now. So there's not the justification right now to suggest going out and getting a second dose in January, although, you know, studies are ongoing, and maybe that's where we might head to one day, but right now I don't think it's justified.
So Now, what's the guess? So we heard there may be a milder flu season. That's what you told us based on what's happening in Australia and Brazil. The second component is that the vaccines probably are getting a little more effective, at least against the H3N2, because they were reformulated. What's your guess on how the season will go?
So my guess, and I'll preface this by saying it's exactly that, it's a guess, is that we're not going to have the same flu season we had last year. So there was obviously a very severe H3 season. So in my mind, it's unlikely we're going to see H3 dominating again this year, and that's good. That's always the H3 is associated with the more severe flu seasons. So most of what we've seen leading up into, well, now globally has been a dominance of the H1s. And, those are a better match to the vaccine. They can still cause severe disease, but it's not usually in the same sort of ballpark as H3. So, my guess, we're not going to have the same season we had last year. It's going to be a different virus. And it's going to be certainly less severe, or hopefully.
And now let's talk a little bit. Are there anything, we've heard a little bit of rumors that there's going to be a 10-year vaccine like we get with Tdap. What's the date on that, and why is that, and is it made differently, or why should it be 10 years soon when it's always been a yearly flu? And why are some vaccines 10 years like Tdap and this flu only 1 year?
So, I think the big difference with flu versus some of these other vaccines we get, I think perhaps the most important is flu viruses change. So unlike some of these other bugs that we immunize against that are pretty constant. So once you get immunized, you're protected for a lot longer. Flu, it's we're in a constant game of cat and mouse with this virus. So, we'll change the vaccine to get closer to it, then it'll move away, and so on and so on. So that's the main reason. It's potentially also that the flu vaccine is not the most potent vaccine we have, and so that's where there's a lot of resources and from the NIH and from the CDC and international agencies to just make better flu vaccines. So there's lots of research going into this right now. Can we make a vaccine that targets different parts of the virus? Can we deliver the vaccine differently? Can we just completely make it with different technologies? None of these are going to be available in the next two or three seasons, unfortunately. And, it's possible we're not going to get where we want to be, but, we are going to get better vaccines, whether they're going to be incrementally better or the game changes. The jury's still out on that one.
And if you had anything to tell our listening audience, it would probably be get a flu shot. But there's some other suggestions on how to avoid the flu as well.
Yep. So certainly the vaccine is the best defense we have. There are, of course, the types of things your mother and grandmother told you about when you're sick. Sort of wash your hands. If you're sick, stay at home. Don't go to school or go to work. The other thing I think, which is there's been some developments in the last few weeks. We also have, of course, some antiviral pills that we can take against flu. There's Tamiflu, but the FDA just in the past week or so have approved a new class of anti-flu drug, and this is a once only tablet. So rather than twice a day for Tamiflu, this is a tablet you take once and provides protection. I don't think it's available on the market yet, but it's just been approved by FDA. So, I think there's hope that before the end of the season, this new antiviral might be available as well.
And washing your hands is important. Avoiding people who are coughing or sneezing, staying away from schools if you don't need to be in them, or kids where they have a large risk of it. other things? Is there anything else we haven't thought of? And of course, I think the most important, of course, is getting the flu shot next to washing your hands. But anything else that I should be thinking of, if you will?
No. Unfortunately, that's kind of where we're at. Just basic hygiene when you're sick. You know, because you know people are. We're probably only infectious for a short period of time, so just taking those precautions while you're at the height of sort of illness may stop you from sharing your germs with others, you know, in your family or at your school or at your work. So, you know, that's why those recommendations are in play.
Well, thank you very much. We've been talking with Dr. Webby of St. Jude's Children's Hospital, the Infectious Disease Department, and the information about the flu is important. Just to give you my take on it, remember, if you're over 50, getting the flu shot 10 years in a row decreases your risk of heart attack and stroke by about 50% in both the Kaiser data and the British Columbia data, decreases your risk of dying of any cause by about 25% in those data studies, because it is a very inflammatory thing that causes plaques to break off. So even if you're not worried about yourself getting a respiratory illness or other things from the flu, it's important to preventing heart attack and stroke and death. Also, it's not just for you. It's for the community, because as more people get the flu shot, there's less chance of it staying alive in the community and infecting those most vulnerable, the older and the youngest of the young. Dr. Webby, thank you very much. Thank you also for downloading us, Ben, for great engineering, but especially you for downloading us, listening. Do rate us. This is 922B of You, the Owner's Manual podcast. Remember, always download the A section too. That's the news of the week, but especially the medical news, what it means for you so you can live at the top of your curve. Do get a flu shot and look for the data. We'll carry it here about whether you should get a second shot this year, what the recommendations officially are, and what it means for you. Thanks again.